Welcome. This is Why Life Is, and I'm your host, Niles McFlower. And tonight, we have another great show dealing with metaphysics, spirituality, and, well, just about anything else you might want to think about. Science is certainly involved in it. And to begin with, let me first tell you that I thought tonight would be a good night to talk about something that we have covered sometimes in certain ways, although tonight will be different. And that is God's test with evil. As I said, we've talked about evil. We've talked about some of the elements of what it means to deal with evil, sometimes how to fight in face of it. But tonight I'm going to talk about the philosophical as well as the practical applications of this concept. A lot of people say, well, how could there even be a God if there's evil? Because if God is all-powerful and all-good, then how come there's evil? That's an old philosophical question. And there are many other questions that people have in terms of evil. Some people believe that evil doesn't exist. Only people's behavior sometimes becomes very bad because their training, upbringing, education, their familiar situations, whatever, cause them to develop into a certain way, which could be changed, it is thought. If you just love them more, or if you help to educate them better, or if they were coaxed in some way to change. This is an interesting thought. And that's one of the arguments and discussions we'll talk about tonight. But most importantly, if we're going to talk about God's test with people, we have to make at least the assumption for right now that there either is or likely is evil in the world. And if you disagree with this, I'll deal with that during the program. But I don't want to start with those issues because they reduce the real impact of what tonight's show is about. It's not about whether there is or is not evil, because it's the acceptance that there is evil from at least the standpoint that we're starting with. God's test with evil obviously indicates that. It doesn't mean that you have to agree with that at this level or any time during the show if that's where you're at. Okay, so what do I mean by a test, and what do I mean by evil? I think most people understand what I mean by God. Said it enough, if you've heard the show any times, I think you've heard an explanation of that. The creator of our universe, obviously, is one thing. But what is the test? What does it mean to test? It means the following, that it isn't enough to proclaim, express an opinion of, declare, or pontificate that one is capable of dealing with something and one is capable of successfully completing whatever they're dealing with. Because those elements that I just said and many, many other kinds of declarations fail to prove the worthiness of a person, a group, an entire planet, of its ability to deal with a particular type of problem. So consequently, the word test, in this case, is used as many people connotatively decide it usually to be, which is to determine the validity and truthfulness and accuracy of the position and abilities of people. In this case, it's a test of people. Now, you might say, okay, that's interesting, but why would there be a need for such a test if there wasn't evil? I mean, well, why not get rid of evil so you don't have to test for it? Well, let's talk about what evil is. Evil is a confusion in the minds of people into believing that either God does not exist, and therefore, any specific behavior that is against what other people might declare as spiritual or good or godly thought and godly actions, are anything that's against that would be wrong. And further, that if there is something against those things, it isn't necessarily that someone is evil, it's just that they're making some sort of mistake. However, what is evil in the godly sense? Evil in the godly sense is that it is the desire for people who don't believe there is a God, or who believe there is a God, but they want to be bigger than God, they want to be more important than God. This is a strange idea, but this is what they want. They want to be more powerful than God, if there is one, and they may not at least outwardly express that there is one. They then expect that they can destroy what is the makeup of the growth and development of God. Not that they could destroy God per se, just the parts of God that in some way influence or affect the lives of human beings and other life. And that part of God is God's growth, or the purpose, at least one of the purposes, that God created the universe. So in other words, this is an argument, a philosophical argument against God for its purpose in creating a universe. And if that purpose is, as I have suggested, at least in part, the purpose is to grow more of God by creating life that is free to choose to grow more of itself, and if it wants to grow more of God. And those that are evil, and evil itself, because it actually has some sort of self that goes different from the people it has an effect on, is seeking to destroy the parts of God that interfere in the desires and aspirations of evil. It doesn't necessarily want to destroy all of God, because it doesn't see that that's even relevant to its issue. Whether it believes in God or not, it doesn't see it's really relevant. It only wants to get rid of the parts that interfere with it. Very big difference here from what some people assume evil is. Because some people assume evil only wants to destroy God per se, and that isn't exactly correct. I mean, certainly you could use that as an argument. I would say that I don't see the evidence that evil is attempting to do that. It's attempting to do the other thing, which is to get rid of all parts of God that interfere in any way with it. But for a lot of people, they would say, that's like cutting fine hairs here. It doesn't make much difference if you're getting to those extreme levels, and I might have to agree with that. Okay, so the evil has a specific plan, in other words. That plan is the opposite of God's plan. God's plan is to create life that can choose to grow more, and if it chooses to grow more, it can choose to grow more like its creator, which helps to expand what God is. It's kind of a weird thing, because if God is this great being who can do anything, why doesn't it do it all for itself? And the answer is, how boring would that be? And besides which, it doesn't really change anything. God, and be an unchangeable universe. This is a true changeable universe, because the effect of evil being here is proof of it. Evil has at least some effect on God, and therefore it shows that God, while God is omnipotent and omniscient within its own sphere, as it involves itself with human beings, that certainly is not true. And evil is part of humanity. It's important to realize now that evil does not exist, in my opinion, in any higher part of life than humanity. And it only exists in lower parts of life, lower than humanity, if humanity is involved in making it a part of it. So it's all about us. It's all about human beings, which is really fascinating, I find. because therefore God's test with evil involves human beings, period. That's it. And you can say, oh, what about the angels and the higher masters and what about all the animals that are affected? And well, yes, there's a secondary factor in those situations. But the evil itself resides in the human beings, and then others respond badly, goodly, in between to what's going on in the human beings. So if there weren't human beings, there would be no evil to talk about. And that would be it. Eliminate human beings, and evil is gone. Now, there could be some residual effects on a planet where evil's been around with human beings for a long time. It might take a few thousand years or something to get rid of all the effects of evil. But for all intents and purposes, get rid of the human beings, evil's gone. And the test is obviously the test on human beings to determine whether they can deal with, whether they can recognize, understand, fight against, prevent in themselves, sometimes be destructive to, and in many cases be an obstacle to, the growth of evil in themselves and others. That's the test. The test is about that. Now, God uses evil in this test because the test is not just about evil. The test is about whether the human being or beings that are faced with evil are going to choose to find and participate in the growth of God. And you might say, well, why allow that to happen? I mean, why not? If God is all-powerful, all-good, why doesn't he just get rid of all the evil and then we don't have to worry about it? But see, if you get rid of the evil, you get rid of the test. And here's the rub. All right? Now, some people are going to get upset about this, but I'm going to tell it to you. Getting rid of the evil gets rid of the test because there's nothing to test if there's no evil. And once you get rid of the test, you can develop human beings that become amazingly hypocritical, incredibly ignorant, incredibly dishonest, and an easy target on a collective level, if you did it for vast number of the planets, or even one planet maybe, vast numbers of people, for them to be seduced collectively into evil, rather than to have it prevalent at some earlier time. And better to test, better to have it part of the system than to wait for the system to maybe self-destruct, because some people could not and would never know they couldn't pass the test of evil until it reaches some kind of fulminating point that is so vast that literally the universe could be taken over and God's whole plan for life could be destroyed. Evil seeks to destroy life that is seeking to be more like God, but it does not seek to destroy life that is not. Instead, it encourages that life to become more evil. Hope you're following me. So it has a specific plan. It's not random. It doesn't go out and do random bad things. Some people do that. They are not necessarily evil. They may have other issues, to say the least. But evil has a plan, and part of that plan involves what I exactly said. Let me say it over again. Their plan is to destroy life that, in an obstinate and sometimes calculating way, seeks to become more like their creator. It tries to destroy that part of life. So if you're a spiritual disciple, you're trying to become more spiritual yourself, meaning you think more like God and act more like God in some ways, as best as you can and can recognize how to do so, you become a target of evil because that's part of evil's plan. You're on the list then, okay? Whereas if you are not in that vein, and you say, well, I don't know if God exists, and I don't believe in evil, and I don't believe in this, and I don't believe in that, and besides which, I'm just doing what I feel like doing, and it's okay. I'm a humanitarian, so I sometimes don't do bad things. I have compassion for some people, so I think I'm generally a good person. However, that's not the test of evil. The test of evil is, if you are faced with it, what will you do? So the fact that you're a humanitarian and the fact that you're generally a nice person, you give at the office, you sometimes give at church, you go to church, you believe in some elements of a creator, but you're not sure what God really is, and you don't know the difference between spiritual and non-spiritual exactly, that is a problem because you haven't been tested with evil. And because of that, when evil comes knocking on your door, you may say, okay, I'll stop giving it to others. Okay, maybe there's no God at all. Okay, maybe it's okay if this country or that country just disappears. Okay, maybe it's all right if bad people do these sorts of things as long as they don't do it to me. You see the problem. And that's why there has to be a test. Because you become a hypocrite. Become disingenuous, dishonest, not necessarily evil. But once evil approaches you, you then fail the test. Because inevitably it will. So what I'm telling you is that God creates the test, in a sense. God isn't just completely neutral about this. A lot of people say, oh, God just neutral, and if evil does exist, it just has its own way. No, I don't buy that. I believe there are some places and some times when God actually encourages evil as a test. In those places that will most likely succumb to it on a much, much higher and worse scale, should a test not be applied much earlier. And some that fail at least recognize their failure and do something about it. And others that see that some are failing do something about them as well. This is an important concept. These are all important concepts about God's test with evil. And like I said, I have not covered this subject before on radio, in some cases, not even before in other teachings. So it's important to be aware that I'm not just talking about evil tonight. I'm talking about this concept of being tested and why it's so important. Now, some people might say, well, that seems relatively unfair. Why does God choose to test some and not others then? Well, everybody's eventually tested in some way, but some are tested much more and more severely. Why is that the case? Because the test has to match the ability to respond. If a person can be highly responsible, they have to be tested actually at a higher level than someone who has a very meager response to any type of evil. The test there is going to be a very mild and low one, but to them might still seem very pressing and difficult. The relative level of difficulty might remain fairly close in some circumstances, but the absolute levels could be wildly different, as I'm explaining it, isn't it? Okay. And this, by the way, falls into karma, too, and why people have certain kinds of karma and others don't. Same concept. All right, so this is a fascinating subject to me. Earth. Let's talk about Earth. Well, you've probably heard me say, if you've been listening a lot to the shows, Earth is a reincarnation of a failed planet. What do I mean by failed? Well, it's one of those planets that became inundated with evil in its humanity. And it existed in an etheric planet, not a physical one. That's very different and difficult to understand. Etheric planets grow up very quickly. Humanity develops on them hundreds of times faster than on dense physical planets, and usually in star systems that are younger and that have earlier developed stars. They're called first developing stage stars. And interestingly, it was at a time when our star, the Sun, was in its first stage of development. And this planet, some people call it the moon chain planet. It has to do with the fact that a moon today resembles this planet after it was destroyed. But that's really not that important. So it's kind of interesting aside. The important thing is that well over 5 billion years ago, older than the sun today is in the Earth, there was another star that the sun had the same consciousness that created our sun, created, and that star was a much younger kind of star. And it only lasted, give or take, a few tens of millions of years. That's not much time at all, particularly if you know that this sun of ours has been around for about 5 billion years, so it's a huge amount of time. And it's going to be around for almost that long till its very demise. Maybe for the next billion years, the sun will continue to create life on Earth, at least for probably 10 to 100 million years, that would be true. At any rate, so Earth's prior planet was an etheric form. That means it had no dense physical nature. It was an electromagnetic planet. It also had an astral and a mental body, but it didn't have a physical form. And people were developed on that planet. In etheric form, it's much easier to live, and people develop much more quickly, which is a good thing. But the speed at which people develop on those planets creates an anomaly, because the time to work out all the problems, all the kinks in the human nature is not slow enough to ensure that evil can't take over. And so evil finds it easier to take over on a planet that is in etheric form than one in dense physical, even though the dense physical world is a much more difficult world to function in. Physical planets generally take so much longer to develop life on, and especially human life, that there's enough time, usually, for these tests that I'm talking about to work their way out, for humans to even develop themselves to the level where they have enough consciousness to be declared human, and to be able to recognize and understand God. But things aren't pushed along so fast, so that as humans develop, they learn and understand the nature of themselves, God, and evil. Earth has a problem. And the problem is that its sister, or first planet, died in a way that was truly catastrophic. And as a result, at the hand of some very bad evil. Not the worst of the worst, but pretty bad. So, some of the souls from that planet decided to come and be reincarnated on physical Earth because it's under the same type of star. And there'll be a lot of similarities, therefore, between the physical Earth and their old home on this etheric planet. However, because Earth had such bad karma from the last planet, that was its sister planet, it was decided that Earth needed to move forward faster to kind of overcome the karma, not fall victim to evil again in some respects, and help out other planets in a true soul way that are facing these kinds of evil that are growing because Earth's prior planet failed. Every time you have a failed planet, billions of years go by now, we have 5 billion years, and in that period of time, many other parts of the universe have developed much worse kinds of evil that may have been able to be thwarted had the first sister planet of Earth not gone evil and destroyed itself. So we have some karma here. And it was thought by the creator and creators of Earth, it would be a good thing if we could accelerate the rate that humans would be developed on the planet by about 10 to 20 million years, 10 at the minimum, 20 at the max. And within this time range, attempt to test humans early on so that, and this is going to sound weird, so that we wouldn't ultimately go to the very end and then destroy ourselves again the way the last planet did. Now, you can argue that, well, yeah, but if you accelerate things that much, and you're accelerating these tests, can't you go too far the other way? And the answer is yes. So this is an experiment, and the answer to the question will come out in the solution to the problem or the failure. Some have believed, and some of them have been very high beings, that we are going way too fast. But sometimes God, or the subcategories of God's, we'll say, virtue in light, informed beings, in lightly informed beings, light-like informed beings, these beings choose to go to the max in some locales with the strong possibility of failure. But they do so because they try all kinds of experiments, some that are only slight, some that are more moderate, some that are fairly heavy-handed, and some that are extreme. Earth is in the extreme category. Welcome to Earth. And being in the extreme category, the tests that we have started early and extreme. And how bad are they? Well, they don't get much worse. Yeah. And what about the rest of the souls that came here? I mean, only less than 10% of all the souls in the world right now came from this early planet that we're talking about. So like over 90% of the souls right now connecting with Earth came from other planets. Why would they come here? I mean, it isn't like they're getting lulled into this thing. They are informed before they come, and they understand that to come here is a great risk because their incarnations here, their time here, could blow up, could just fail. And they are aware of this. But they also are aware that they are seeking the challenge of the test itself. They're seeking it in their incarnates. The souls themselves are not as tested in this equation as the incarnates, who have to go through the lower three worlds where the tests are employed. And the tests are employed without the understanding and knowledge, for the most part, of most of the incarnates, or humans, us, having much knowledge. Yeah, our souls do. But if we're not soul conscious, we don't. And so we're going through these tests, and we really don't understand that we're going through the test. Okay. And isn't that something that is rather treacherous and difficult to deal with? Yet we put ourselves here as our souls. We go back to our soul after each lifetime, and we re-up. Not every soul does, a few leave. But actually, it is my understanding that more come in than have left in each period of time. Isn't that amazing? So Earth has a great attraction in being one of the highest testing of all planets for evil. It shows the veracity and the total fearlessness of the soul. Souls are fearless. You know it has to be true because they're here in informed ways and oftentimes to replace other souls that are skipping out. And they're coming here knowing this is one of the worst places to come as far as the difficulty of the tests are concerned. Not worst in terms of being able to prove themselves through their incarnates, of the test. But that's where they're coming from. And I find this absolutely amazing because it tells us so much about souls and where we're hoping to get ourselves to be while we're incarnate. Because that's what the main part of the soul test is about, is to wake up and be our soul, and then we won't be. The test is over, really. Once you're the soul, the test is over. Wow. Sounds simple, doesn't it? So why don't we all find our souls and that's the end of the system? It wouldn't be easy, wouldn't be easy. Yeah, the problem is that evil doesn't make it easy, and we don't make it easy for ourselves. So between those two issues coming into play, it's a real tough time. All right, let's go a little deeper into this philosophy just so we can kind of clear up some questions. How come there are some disagreements among the higher echelon of beings, way beyond human, about how tough to make a test? Why aren't they all this little lockstep in line and just like their creator, just go along with this? Well, you see, the creator is not making the test. The creator is making it possible for other life forms to make the test. So it's probably wrong to say the test per se is made by the creator. It is allowed to be made by the freedom that it provides. And it seeks there to be tests, but it doesn't do so in a directed way. Okay, so there's these higher beings that are making the test. And how come they aren't all together? And the answer to that is fairly clear. If they were all together, it wouldn't be a test, it would be a fiat. And instead of there being any possibility of failure, there would be almost a puppet show going on with a great deal of manipulation involved, because there would be no differentiation in spiritual thinking, which there is a huge amount, by the way. And the reason you want to have differentiation in life and thought, and especially spiritual thought, is that there is growth in that. If all of our spiritual beings, higher than humans, had exactly the same thought about tests or anything else, the growth would stop, and that would pretty much fix our universe at that place. And the growth of life and stuff. This is a problem. And so the answer is fairly simple. There is wide spectrum of change and disagreement in what tests for evil should be like among higher beings, going beyond human. Not because any one of them or others are either right or wrong, but because the right thing is for there to be differentiation so many kinds of experiments can go on and many kinds of outcomes are possible, with the highest and best being developed by the lowest and greatest, smallest form of human, smallest and consciousness form of human. So the lower controls the outcome, while the higher provides the tests in some respect. Let me give you the other part of the equation. I got that part, I hope. Hope you understand that concept. But there's another part of this equation, and that's evil. You see, evil also is involved in the test. And the higher, through great wisdom, the higher, not humans, we're in the middle of this. But the higher, through great wisdom, chooses not to directly involve itself in preventing evil from testing. I know that sounds weird, but why don't they just come in and stop them from doing any bad tests on humans? It's the same reason that God doesn't interfere with the tests. They're just extensions of God, and if they started to interfere, then the whole system falls apart and you don't have testing anymore, you see. And you can't have freedom of choice, freedom of will. You can't have growth of life if you don't have total and complete hands-off freedom for evil to do its thing. There's just no way around it. And that's true of the rest of life, including humanity itself. So we all have to be these free agents. Now you could say, but I heard that the spiritual hierarchy of some great beings have interfered with evil and whatever. But yes. There is the exceptions to this, and I'll, in a few minutes here, 4 minutes. I'll try to explain what those are. When you have a situation where evil has ventured to the point where it is functioning outside of what is known as karmic issues. In other words, it goes beyond what is karmically capable for it to do. It has this capability. You know, it's hard to understand. I'll talk more about it later in the show. But it has the capability of doing it. It could go beyond what it's allowed to do based upon the negative aspects of humanity. And it says, ah, well, with just about another 15% of making the test harder, we could cause humanity to actually fail, even though they haven't failed that much up to this point. We'll just go beyond what the karma says. They can do that. And they oftentimes do, by the way. Well, that 15%, whatever it is, let's say it's 15%, can be matched by the kingdom greater than human, provided the humans seek that help. If the humans seek the help, the dark side, evil ones, go on 15%, 20%, whatever number you want to say, too far over the line, then the side of light could come in and do something about it. And there's actually a period of time when this can happen and when it can't. Generally speaking, on Earth, it can happen about 75% of the time, and about 25% of the time, during 3 months of the year, they can't really do much about that sort of thing. They can only do a minor, very minor amount. But so it's a kind of a weird, situation. And to offset that problem, the evil ones are most weak during the time that the higher unconsciousness beings are going to be mostly vacant from being of much help. That's how it works. But then they go get their stride on, and by within a few months, they are at their full strength, and then they really go after it. So it's kind of a weird thing. The spring is when the evil is weak, and the fall is when evil has got its strength to initiate new things. So it's a kind of a weird deal. And it's right before the fall. It isn't exactly spring and fall. It's close to those times, but it's not exactly those times. Because it has more to do with certain moon phases and other things. Anyway, looking at it from that standpoint, there is equity. There is fairness. I know it seems that it may not be true, but there really is. And so I want you to know that as we go to break, that this system is balanced, there is fairness, but there's also openness and freedom. And when we come back, I'll talk about some of the practical implications of God's test with evil and much, much more. And we'll be back in about 2.5 minutes from right now.
Hun, what book are you reading?
It's a novel, kind of, about romance, love, and spiritual life in general.
Kind of a novel? What do you mean?
Well, it's based on some real-life experiences and even real characters. Some of their experiences are fascinating and remarkable. I can't put this book down.
How come the title is Afterlife Love?
That's part of the fascination. This book describes the afterlife in intricate detail and even explains why things are the way they're explained.
But how can anyone write about or know that?
Some of the characters travel out of body to some places that people who've already died also go to. I'm finding it completely believable because it all makes sense and fits into a bigger picture for me.
Hun, what happens to these people?
You can read it for yourself when I'm done if you want.
Better yet, I'll get my own copy so we can discuss it while we read. Let me see. I'll write down the title. It's Afterlife Love by Niles McFlower. McFlower.
Afterlife Love is available in some bookstores and from the publisher at agelesswisdom.com or 480-966-3132. That's 480-966-3132.
Hi, everyone. Since childhood, I've had questions about my life and life in general that I couldn't find adequate answers to. Questions like, why am I here? Why are others here? Does the universe have a purpose? And how does that relate to my life? More recently, I've been wondering what happens when we die, especially the reasons why. I'm more of a doubter than a believer in many things, and answers that include the whys allow me to think and figure out the truth for myself. I've been reading a book, Life's Hidden Meaning. This one book contains more answers, including the whys, than all other sources I've read or heard. It's amazing to me that every one of my questions has been thoroughly answered. More importantly, I have found that all of these answers so far have checked out to be true. I hope this message helps some of you in your quest for better understanding. The name of this wonderful book is, again, Life's Hidden Meaning by metaphysician Niles McFlower. Some bookstores sell it. I got my copy directly from the publisher at agelesswisdom.com. Life's Hidden Meaning may enlighten your mind and bring some peace and joy to your heart.
We're back. This is Why Life Is, and I'm your host, Niles McFlower. Tonight we're talking about God's test with evil. And if you've heard the first part of the show, you have some, we'll say, philosophical understandings now of how come there is a test or tests. Let's get into some of the practical nature of what this really is about. As far as the world as it is right now, some of you may be aware that there's a whole bunch of what I would call evil going on in religious fanaticism, which behind the religious fanaticism is really a question of the desire on the part of some people in the world to enforce their control and power over large numbers of other people under the guise of it being a religious tenet. Of course, any religion that espouses such kinds of power and control and destruction of others is evil. And by most people's definition of religion would be anti-religious, at least anti-God. Now, you could have a religion that might be anti-God, but that would be kind of a strange thing. At any rate, so that's going on. And this, the purpose of these people, supposedly, is to create their religion as the supreme and almighty religion, because they believe that's what God wants. But if you realize what I said earlier in this show, God seeks there to be an open forum of many different kinds of thought, behaviors, etc., so there can be growth of God. Anyone that wants to get rid of an open forum and have only one anything, especially a religion that controls the power and thoughts and actions of all others, under, of course, the power and control of people who claim themselves to be godly influenced, those folks are, by definition, evil, if you understood what I said in the beginning of the show. So, we have a fundamental evil taking place in the world today. It isn't just with religion, though, because religion has joined forces with a number of a-religious or non-religious philosophies, everything from certain types of communism, including Marxism and colonial Marxism, and we'll call it, the best way I could describe it would be underhanded and secretive socialism, which involves things like the Fabian Society. And the general tenets of most of the progressive socialists, and most of the tenets of progressivism has been has adopted secret, underhanded, subterfuging, and power struggling and class battling actions within interactions within their doctrines, but always done, or most of the time done, under secrets. And so those kinds of socialists, which is most socialists today, but not all, and most progressives today, but not all, and nearly all communists. There's certain odd types of communism which may not completely fall within this realm. They basically have an anti-religious viewpoint. Some, obviously, are not. You could have a religious viewpoint, and even mean technically a Marxist communist, even though Marx said that religion is the opiate of the masses, and that it's used to destroy communism and any other type of collective system, including socialism. And Marx, of course, declared that socialism was the first of several steps necessary to establish communism, and so he was a socialist as well as a communist. But in looking at these kinds of things, we need to understand that they really are just cover-ups for being a test of evil. Now, this is hard to swallow for some people, because I know that some people who are devout communists or socialists or whatever will say, well, I'm not evil. All I want to do is just control everybody through this system or that system for their betterment. Tell them what to eat, tell them when to sleep, how they should take care of their physical bodies and their emotional health, and how they should live every part of their life, because I know better. But I'm not evil. Okay, let's go back to that definition about evil. Evil wants to remove the choices of humanity that have anything to do with freedom, love, spirit, God. All those things it wants to remove. It will give you choices, but all the choices eliminate those other things, making it the supreme power and not God, not the creator. Okay. So evil is against the principles that founded the United States and in favor of countries like China, Iran, North Korea, a host of many, many other countries, Cuba, Venezuela. You can just count them off. There's dozens of them. And this type of evil is hidden from us because evil has learned for a long time. Before there was an earth, evil already knew this as a collective source of knowledge and some level of consciousness, that it can never express or reveal its true intentions. Why? Because human beings by nature have a sense of right and wrong and God and non-God and of how to be good and to be supportive of things that are godly. We have it in our nature. It's the two senses that have consciousness in us that are not fully conscious in any other lower forms of life, including the nicest and best animals. We have fully developed conscious heart chakras and crown chakras. The heart chakra in our bodies, we have several of them, in physical, the etheric, and the astral, and the lower and higher mental. We have those chakras. They help us to understand God. We don't even have all. They give us recognition, recognition immediately of God, not understanding necessarily, recognition, and then they give us the ability. Once we recognize God and we apply understanding to that recognition, the ability to create God, and more so in our own actions, thoughts, and actions, and to help others do the same. And so that one is the heart chakra. That's the one that gives us a recognition of God and eventually an understanding of God. And then we can build on that and become creative of more virtue in form or light in form in ourselves and our behaviors and that in others. We also have, therefore, a sense of evil because we know when people aren't doing this. And you could say, well, if we have the sense, then how come there's this test and we have to deal with all this stuff, and how come so many people aren't passing the test? We have the sense. What's wrong with the sense? Evil has a way of diminishing that sense. Let me explain how it works. And again, it has brought this about not because it's some super genius power, It's because it's been around a lot longer than any human being has. It's been around for billions and billions of years. And when it's been around since there's been human beings, actually. And when you've been around that long, and it has a collectiveness, so it takes whatever it gains from any planet, no matter what part of the universe it's in, it could be a distant galaxy, it doesn't matter. Time and space do not affect evil. It actually uses space to communicate, so it doesn't care about how much space there is between itself and another evil thing. But the point that I'm getting at is that evil has had so much experience that there's very little that it hasn't experienced. And therefore, it has found ways around the fact that humans have these senses. Now, say, well, what does it do? Okay. So, because I need it all, that if I'm going to try to thwart this thing, okay, the first thing it does is it tries to convince people that it doesn't exist. That's its first, that's its biggest trick, okay? That's the big one. And how does it manage to do that? Well, it knows that if it could turn off the recognition of God, that's a big deal. It's going to be much harder, strangely, for it to turn off. Once we recognize God, it's going to be harder for it to turn off the creative side. It has to use massive amounts of fear to turn off the creative side, which is the crown chakra. But it doesn't have to use virtually any fear at all if it turns off the recognition side coming from the heart chakra. But it has to do something special to do that, and let me try to explain what that special thing is, okay? It has to convince us through feelings that we have in our solar plexus center, our gut feelings. It has to tell us through our desires, which are fed into that center, we call it the solar plexus center, which come from our astral body predominantly. Even though this we're talking about in all the bodies, I'm just talking about the astral body, I'm talking about the physical, I'm talking about the lower mental, etc. It creates a conflict, prevents us from getting the information because of a very strong or a series of strong desires. This is its trick, okay? You ready for this? This is the way it works. Now, there are a lot of variations on this theme, so I don't want you to think that I'm giving you, like, the answer. I'm giving you a general concept that's kind of has zillions of examples. But what it does is this. It creates a number of strong desires in the astral body that become fixed. They're called glamours. It helps to encourage these glamours, not because in some way that makes it stronger. People think that when they read novels or see Twilight Zone episodes or whatever, that that's maybe what the author is trying to get at. Sometimes that is, because that's a mistaken view. But that isn't really the truth. It's a means to the end. So the desires may be for more money, for more sex, for more fame and influence, and for greater ways of having control so that you can get more of what you want in whatever way it can be had. All these huge desires with many hundreds of small ones and all these things connected together in the astral body. And those desires then become a means of confusion because they overcome the reasonable, truthful centers in our mental body, mental mind. And they just literally overwhelm the mental thinking so that when a person says, well, gee, I have a desire to eat a whole bunch of bad foods for myself, because they'll either cause too many calories, too much fat, my cholesterol go up. But I have a desire to do it, so screw that, I'm just going to eat. I have a desire to have lots of sex with lots of different people because that sounds like it might be fun, and besides which, it gives me all kinds of secondary rewards, and sex feels good. I have a desire to have lots of money, so I'll cheat, steal, do whatever I need to do. Provided I don't get caught and go to jail, I don't want to do that. And I'll do all that stuff because money is the greatest thing since sliced bread. Or maybe I just want to have power. I want to have control. So I have a desire to be the head of my whatever, social club, the head of my church, the head of my government, the head of something. So I have control over other people. These desires become very, very intoxicating. And people follow the desire and ignore the recognition of God as a result of trying to have the desire met. Okay? Evil loves that, and that is its famous big-ticket trick. Now, some great scholars and some great spiritual leaders, from early popes to people before there was recorded history, have brought this to our attention. But they codified it and made it sound too much like don't do this, don't do that, instead of have a true understanding of what evil is and how it gets to us. And we got lost in that process. Now, human beings didn't have the conceptual abilities they have today, as I'm hoping you all out there are somewhat using in hearing me, that we're missing most of these if you go back tens of thousands of years ago. And so instead, the invention of all these contrived don't do this, don't do that, no, don't steal, don't rob from the poor or the rich, don't do this or that because it's bad. But it doesn't deal with the concept. It doesn't tell us what's really going on. And so the first thing that a person has to do when they are faced with the recognition issue of God and they're failing to recognize God because they got desires, they have to cut down their desires and dissociate them from their thought and recognition, their mental thought about God. They don't have to get rid of every desire right away. That's virtually impossible. But they have to start realizing that this is what leads them into evil. And some religions actually teach some parts of what I just said. They just don't explain it very well on a conceptual basis. So people still don't get it. I'm trying to help all of you out there tonight, because this is really important in today's world. All right, so that's the first stage. You've got to get to the point where these desires, for whatever it is, aren't influencing you. So your recognition apparatus, which is the heart chakra in consciousness, can then awaken and recognize God. Then the next stage is to understand God. Now, the recognition is first. You've got to say, there's a God. Oh, boy, there is a God. Okay, that's a good thing you can start with. And, oh, boy, God wants us to be free. God wants us to be loving. You got that part. So then there's this beginning understanding. But then you got to go further with the understanding, because the tests start taking place as soon as you start breaking the connection between these desires in your thought process, called the karma and monastic element. You're not going to break it right away, and some people won't break it for many lifetimes, but you can start making little changes that will help. And, okay, so you get to the point where you say, I think I got the God thing down. I recognize that God is there. I have enough understanding that God is making us free, that there is such a thing, therefore, as evil. I got that part. Now, what can I do next? Well, the next thing is that you have to start loving, because with understanding has to come love. So you have to start giving it bigger and bigger ways, and each one of those ways is going to use some of the energy from the desires. So it's going to be directly in conflict with your desires. Whatever your desire is, you may have to give up some of it for the benefit of others, for the goodness, to create goodness, help others in goodness, and help them to create more goodness as well. That's the ticket. That's what's going to get you to the point. And at that point, you're starting to become a spiritual disciple if you're doing things like that. And that's a real good thing. That's a real good thing. And that kind of starts protecting you from evil. It's still at this level of recognition and understanding and still mostly involving the heart chakra. But until you reach a certain thing called initiation levels, and until you reach the third initiation for the most part, or at least the accepted part of the second initiation, you're going to be mostly dealing with things mostly from the heart chakra. Somewhat, if you're working in a spiritual group, you can then start working on the crown chakra. If you're working alone, nope, you're going to be stuck pretty much at that heart chakra level. Depends what you choose to do with your life. Spiritual groups really help you because you can work on both of these at the same time, which is a little help. Okay, so we still got the next problem. The next problem, if we're looking at this thing as a problem for humans, is, well, okay, thanks very much for that explanation on the heart chakra. I can start working on that. I think I will. But the bigger issue then comes in with the crown chakra of creation. And this is a real difficult thing, because it's one thing to be giving and loving, especially if you're doing it with a group and it's helpful. If you find people that you can do it with together, you can get more accomplished. It's a good thing. But when you want to be creative yourself and create new ways of creating God, that's a big deal, because that really goes directly against evil. And when you do that, you invite evil to attack you more. Because evil's biggest problem is it's not very creative. And when someone or some group of people are, watch out. Because then you go right to the head of the target list. And then you may become afraid. Because the fear is that now evil, you know that evil exists, but now evil is coming after you. And evil's other trick is to get you to believe that evil is everywhere and to lose your discrimination of who is evil and who is not evil and that and that. So you really have to work, hone it. And that's how evil usually defeats people, is because you spend too much time going after people who aren't evil. And you may fail to see the real evil ones that might be even closer and moving in on you. So you got to be really aware in the creative side of things and be recognizing that you are a target and that you're probably going to have some fear reactions and that you need to overcome your fear by being more creative yet, more sacrificial yet than you've ever been. You need to kind of balance sacrifice and fear together so that you overcome the fear with the sacrifices and then become much more creative. So with each sacrifice, you can become more creative because you actually lower your fear. The sacrifices come as a hidden form of the fear before you make the sacrifice. So when you feel like, oh God, I have to give this up, at that point, that's when you're most afraid. And once you make the sacrifice, that's when the fear goes down or away. And then you've got a real weapon, because then you become amazingly more creative at that instant. How do you become more creative? Because you freed yourself from the limitation of fear. Fear is limiting because you want to avoid doing new things, avoid fighting evil, avoid finding evil to fight, and recognizing that which is good and that which is not good, all together at the same time. You've got to do all those things virtually at one time. The crown chakra demands much more of us than the heart, and it's more difficult to be successful with. But once you are, you become a real force to be reckoned with in the world, which is an amazing thing, right? Applaud people who do this, because it's a great thing for them to do. Okay, I'm going to give you a little bit of a rest at this point. Just think it's good that we cool off our brains for a few minutes, because I'm saying an awful lot in a very short time. And, of course, you can re-listen to these shows. So if I go too fast, the good news is in a couple of days the show will be up, first at the radio station, a few days after that probably on our website. And you'll be able to re-listen and say, oh, I got to get this stuff down again because this is great stuff, but it's a little much to get in a couple of hours, and this guy doesn't stop talking, you know. Well, now I will stop talking for a minute or two anyway. Let me tell you what's going on with Bai Qi Jizik. We have been selling it, which is good, and the people who have been using it, I would say 95% or more are getting good results. There's still 5% who won't, and that's just the way it is. But if you try it and it doesn't give you the results that you expect, return it, you get your money back. That's it. No questions asked. Although we may ask a few for others to find out how come it maybe didn't work for you, but you're not going to be cross-examined and all that kind of stuff. Never. No, that's it. We're only on your side. We want to be of help to you, not cause a problem. This was created to help people with pain. How well does it work? Well, if you check just the amount recommended on the bottle, it deals with moderate to severe pain. But if you take more than that under doctor's recommendations, then, or a healthcare professional, then you could get really severe to extreme pain reduction. But it's taking a lot. And you always can call us and we'll give you what opinions we can about the situation. If you're interested in getting it, you can call this phone number, 602-431-5762. And you can talk to somebody about buying Bai Qi Jizik. It's a great analgesic. What does it do? Well, it changes the way the energies in your body are dealing with pain, the way they're reporting pain, and the way that they're eliminating some of the issues that cause pain. So it's very important because it isn't just masking or covering up the pain the way some narcotics and other kinds of drugs do. It's not a drug. It's made out of 61 herbs, just natural herbs, and two nutraceuticals, which are well-known and also come from natural sources. So it's really a great 63 total ingredients, and it's a great, great product. And you can take a lot to begin with, and then you start slowly working your way down in its use for most kinds of conditions, and particularly chronic conditions, this is true. If you have arthritis, any kind of arthritis, but if you have arthritis, definitely try this because this stuff is amazing for that. It's great for other things. It even works on migraine headaches for most people. Sometimes you have to take more than the recommended amount on the bottle for severe migraine headaches, but it still works. And you can talk to us about doing that or talk to your professional, healthcare professional. Okay, you can also go to buyjizik.com. buyjizik.com, and you can look up more about it there, and you can buy it there. Also, you can see at buyjizik.com, Soul Balance, Ideal Cell Sorption Resveratrol for adults and pets. Some of the other things that I've been involved in helping to create, and others are involved in making and selling. It's a great, great product and products, and they're based upon the science of Bai Qi. Science of Bai Qi is the changing of energy, Qi energy, in our bodies so that we can live more healthful, a more healthy and well life. That's what that's about. Okay, give it a try. Again, I'll give you the phone number one more time. 602-431-5762. Give me a call. Okay, going back now. Brain cooled off? Cool now? Okay. God's test with evil. That's what we're talking about. So let's say that you did understand what I explained before the break here, and that you kind of got the idea, but you say, well, yeah, I don't want to be tested by being afraid. What am I going to do? Well, you take this one step at a time. Start with the desires. Start with those fixed desires we call glamours. And start slowly changing those and using some of that energy to be giving to others, be loving towards others in wise ways. Do that, and I think you'll be able to recognize evil better and to destroy some of it as it might be active in yourself, and to work for the in those who are using it throughout the world to do great havoc. Let's talk about some of the things that are going on in the world today and what we might want to do about it. Well, first, there is this unbelievable movement, as I was saying earlier, towards a non-God, we'll say, political system in which God is driven out because of the belief that a democracy is one in which there is no God. That's ridiculous. As a matter of fact, God is freedom and love and intelligent activity or actions. And if God is those three things, if you're eliminating God, can you imagine living in any place without those three things existing? That's a terrible, terrible issue. Also, when you eliminate freedom, be aware you eliminate sacrifice and creativity. Wow. So people don't have to make any sacrifices because things are usually chosen for them, all the choices are made for them. They do not have freedom of choice, and they have virtually no ability to create anything. That's why almost all systems that are anti-God are also anti-creation in terms of the economies that they propose or purport to be of good value. You go to a communist or socialist system, especially if it's a very highly developed one, there's virtually no room for creativity. It's a non-creative society. And the people in power make most of the choices about the marketplace and what's taking place. And there is really no markets. There's just artificiality created by people in power. And that's because God is driven out of it. Okay, so what is the test? The test is to support systems that provide creativity and choice and sacrifices and that allow people to have freedom in many, many different ways. Liberty allows people to enjoy the maximum amount of freedom without imposing their will or thoughts or actions on others. That's what it means. And if you don't want to believe me about that, then you should be thinking about what I suggested in this show and see if I'm right about it. Remember, I said, let's leave this question open about whether there's even evil. But if there is evil, then it has to be opposed to these systems of free markets and what people would call a structured capitalism that allows people to be creative and open and able to sell what they create and services and goods and be able to compete with others and be able to make sacrifices if they choose to of their whatever they have, their time, their energy, their resources. There's no necessary safety net for them because they're sacrifices. If you want to be safe, then you're going to lose your ability to choose. All right. I mean, completely so. The other thing that we find in the systems that go against God and then espouse evil is that they are supportive of each other. They act collectively as a unit. So you find communists working with people who are radical Muslims. And you find them working with people who are Fabian socialists and progressives. And you find them working with people who are dictators and who are brutal authoritarians, and or just authoritarian, may not even be brutal. And you find them working with people who are arrogant and believe they know more and better than everybody else. And you find all of them working together to control vast numbers of other parts of life and other people. This is the scary thing about it, because the evil may not be just the individual grouping. The evil can be any collective groups much easier than it can be individuals or individual groupings. Evil is really a collective body. It looks for collective bodies to feed upon, like workers' unions. Some of these are completely sensible, and they do generally the right thing for their members and for building a capital society. But the majority of them these days are aligned with communist and socialist activities to the point where what they're really doing is they are exercising the tenets of evil rather than the tenets of good. Those are bad things. So it isn't because their unions are bad. It's because they have found the principles of evil and have adopted them and with others outside of their small group, becoming a larger collective group of evil. That's the scary part. That's where we are today. How much collectivism has taken part? About half to two-thirds of all the evil in the world right now has become collectivized in the last 20 years. Before that, it was less than a quarter. Now we're beginning to see the change that I'm trying to get. It isn't that on an individual level there's substantially more evil in the world. The problem is that evil is learning collectivism and is using it to build its strength through the various differentiations that it would have a great deal of trouble creating on its own. So it allows the creation part to take place in the individual segments, and then it brings them all together. It's not great at creation, but it's good at synthesis and using what is known as the seventh ray to make up for its differences in the first ray use, for those of you who are more familiar with the rays. It tends to use the first ray only destructively, but the seventh ray can stand in for the constructive side, the creative side of the first ray. It's a scary, scary thing. And it's learned this over billions of years. So it's good at it. Now, how good is it? Well, by being collective, it hides itself better because it's harder to find the source of where the evil's coming from when it's moving through dozens and even hundreds of different organizations and connecting these organizations through common elements of desires for power, control, and wealth, and other things. It's doing this at an amazing rate and a scary rate. Its purpose is to inundate good and God so that eventually, no matter how fervent it is fought against, it has taken over so much of society that there is no part to resurrect from what remains that's strong enough to overcome the collective evil. This is happening right here in the United States as I speak. It's also going on in the Middle East. And we need to be aware that this collective ungood is going to be ravaging the planet within the next 2 years. It's coming in such a fast way. It's like a freight train. And the dangers are so high. So high. Because this is the greatest test humanity has yet faced. You can say, well, what happened in the Roman Empire? Did they do terrible things and they took over and this and stuff? You know, it's kind of a weird thing. But I've studied history to some extent. I don't claim to be the world's greatest historian, but I know some. The Romans were kind of weird in one way. They had many evils within their society, and that some of which they imposed on others. But they also had strange, we'll say, good things that they recognized, mostly because they were afraid to go too far with what they were, and in badness, in being evil. And so to counter the possibility of severe resurrection and civil unrest and the expense of all that, they gave a lot of freedom, if they could, to anybody they conquered, more often than not. They were brutal in their conquering, don't get me wrong. But this part of their plan was not entirely evil. But today we have a different world. And there is afoot. The overwhelming desire by these different groups, for different reasons, they don't have the same motives, to have dominance on a world scale. Now, a lot of people know that this started back in the 30s, and earlier of the last century, with communism and fascism and many other kinds of isms, but including imperialism, if you talk about it in a fascist sense for Japan. And so what really we can look at as being the problems from that particular era was the beginnings of the desire for world domination. The interesting thing is that there wasn't enough of a collectiveness among the agents of evil to hold together. Yes, you had an alliance between the German Empire and the Japanese, and to a lesser extent the Italian. But it wasn't enough. But today it's much more dangerous. Today it goes across borders. It's not so much nationalism anymore as it is a caliphate, which is like a Muslim super country, combined with a group of dictators, combined with a group of progressive Fabian socialists, combined with a group of two or three different kinds of communists. I mean, actually about three or four or five kinds of communists. The Red Chinese have their own communist ideas, which is more of a form of restricted and dishonestly controlled and dishonestly acted capitalism. Yeah, they steal most of what they got. Reverse engineers, they have to. And then the North Koreans, their method is isolated reverence for a kind of a dishonest, lousy, no good, but still deitized leader, all those things. And that old style is only good for people who are extremely subjected and poor. They won't work in an industrialized country, so they can't allow themselves to become industrialized because they're very means of exercising communism. It's a weird system. And it's old. And then you've got the communism that is reemerging in some places throughout the world, including here in the United States. And that reemergence has morphed itself into all kinds of flavors. including the concepts of the need for government control of most things, because, after all, human beings without government control can't exist. Of course, it's the antithesis of America, but it's there. And it's growing, not shrinking. Okay. So we have these things going on, which are collective evils, and are coming together as one. They're all coming together, and they're moving rapidly, like a freight train in one direction. And then we've got something else to be concerned about, and that is that this system has become more intelligent from the evil it has adopted, and it uses more subversive ideas and plans than it ever has, and it tries to make itself out to be the good guy. Really, it does. It tries to convince as many people as possible that it's not evil. So that's the scary part. And it's being very successful in consideration of how many people presently are following this system. Talk a little bit more about the Middle East and what's happened the last couple of weeks in Israel. Israel's a test. Interestingly, in a biblical sense, Israel was supposed to be a test. And those of you who have read Life and Meaning know I mentioned some things about that. But the tests are really about whether or not we're going to be able to see who's the good guys and who's the bad guys. Right? Isn't that what it's about? And if you're against Israel as a nation, and if you're anti-Semitic on top of it, then you really are, at this point, a pretty bad guy. But you may not think so. You might say, well, they have all this land they took from the Arabs. Well, did they? Or did they win it in a war because the Arabs tried to annihilate them and refused to give it back to the Arabs? And it wasn't all Arabs. Some of them were non-Arabs, but Muslim countries. And then say, look it. If you'll recognize us, if you'll make nice, if you don't kill any of us for a few years, we'll give you back most of the land, and then we want to exchange this with that or whatever. Maybe we could even open it up to some other kind of third state or something. But we're willing to deal with you, provided that, first of all, you don't try to kill us anymore, and before you don't try to kill us anymore, you have to at least let us know that you don't want to. That hasn't happened. That hasn't happened. Now, you could say, well, it happened in Egypt. Egypt said, yeah, we're not going to go after you. Yeah, but Egypt just reversed themselves in that score in the last 3 weeks. They say, nope, they're going to join with Hamas and all these other Hezbollah. They're going to go ahead and attack Israel again and do whatever part they feel like doing. Even though they got back the whole Sinai thing, they decided, well, what the hell? Now we got more people with better weapons. The United States, we weaponized this. We're in great shape. We had those old Russian tanks. They were no good. Now we got some better stuff. We'll go on attack. It's time for us to wake up, because this is a test. Is it a test on Israel? No. They know who's evil and who's not. Their test is on the creative side, their head chakra. Their test is to no longer stand behind the United States, but to stand in front of the United States and to lead the world in truth. That's our test. What's our test? Well, the United States' test is to recognize that evil is trying to destroy Israel. And apparently, our present administration has failed that test, based upon what was said in the last couple of days. So, and especially reaffirmed this morning. So, when we look at this situation, we're all being tested. We being the people who could stop this, and we're choosing not to. Now, what could the outcome be? Well, the outcome is if we fail this test, lots of people are going to die. And the amount of people who are going to die that are Israelis is small in proportion to the rest of the planet. So it's going to be a huge, huge bad thing. And we are going to be faced with some serious issues. How come we failed to see what was going on? How come if you yourself are a Jew and you practice the faith, you don't necessarily agree with Israel? Weird. It's a weird thing to me. I don't understand that. I'm certainly not practicing Jewish faith, but if I was, I'd be really pretty upset about what's going on. But I don't know about the people who aren't. And I assume there's some listeners to the show who fall into that category. I don't know how you resolve what's happening unless you don't understand the history and other things. But if you don't understand, it's because you're not recognizing that there's evil. So you were back to that heart chakra opening. And your own desires, whatever they may be, maybe your desire is to follow this administration into hell, if that's where it's going, which it looks like it. Maybe that's your desire because you're behind Obama, Pelosi, whoever it might be, 100%. And you say, hey, that's what they say, we're going that way. The ability to recognize things of that nature are big tests. And we don't have too many big tests each year, but we have some. And this is one of them. So after the show tonight, even if you vastly, tremendously disagree with me, it's okay. But think about everything I said and say, well, does this make any sense, what this guy's talking about, or is it just more nonsense, mumble-jumble, political nonsense? Now, I'm not politicizing this as much as I'm trying to explain it in terms of God's test with evil. I see this as a big test. You may not. You may say, well, I don't care if Israel exists or not. There should be just peace in the world because I desire that because I want to live peaceably. And maybe all these crazy terrorists will go away if we just give them all of Israel's land and let them kill all these Israelis because that's what they want to do. They say they do. So let them do it. You ever heard of the idea of feeding a shark? You see, that's the little fish over there. We're the big fish. We're next. And no, they're not going to stop being terrorists and blowing us up or doing whatever. They're just going to take the 240-some-odd nuclear weapons that Israel has if they really take over that country and use them on us. Oh, you didn't know that Israel had nuclear weapons? Okay. Well, the official U.S. statement about it is that they don't. So you can believe that if you want. But I think there's an important issue here in trying to deal with some of the big tests that we're all facing. How do we collectively deal with the collective of evil? How do we stand up to it? Because they're getting very big and powerful. Well, the first thing is who you vote for. So be very careful in the next elections. But the second thing is more immediate, because I don't know before there is another election if this is going to really abate the problem, if we can, because it's being aggravated every day. It's going to be aggravated again on Sunday this week, apparently. So what we need to be looking at is what can we all do? And I would say support those that are fighting evil if we aren't directly involved in the fight ourselves, such as the Israelis are directly involved in this. Well, you got to support them. I don't care what you have to do that. You know? Sell the old car and send it off to the Israeli consulate or something. I don't know, the money. Be as proactive in your statements. Don't let other people be anti-Semitic, as an example. I'm using this as an example because it's happening right now. These things are happening every few months, though. They aren't just things that are just once in a blue moon. This is really going on more and more. These bigger tests are more serious tests that we have to look at. The other thing is to be vigilant about our freedoms and rights. on a daily basis. I'll give you an example. Today, the president was supposed to have gone to Congress and said, look, I want to stay in Libya, and we're fighting there, and I need your permission because more than 60 days have gone by, and I haven't done it. He didn't do that. And instead he said, well, it would be nice if Congress agreed with me. So if they send me some type of notice that they are in agreement, that's fine, but I'm not going for any permission from them. Even though that's unconstitutional and he should be impeached for that, he's choosing to ignore the Constitution. He's also belittling and saying that Congress, it'd be nice if they gave their approval, but he doesn't need it. I want you to think about that and what that means in terms of an authoritarian kind of response to a supposedly free society. That happened today. These kinds of things are tests. They are tests because if we don't do something, if we don't stand up and do something about them when they're happening, we don't have then the ability to respond to evil, and we're failing the test. What happens when you fail the test? Let's talk about failing, because we're running towards the end of the show now, and we need to talk about that. God gives tests to deal with evil so that we can succeed, not so we can fail. So there's no hint, there's no suggestion in God's plan, or the beings that function in conjunction with God's plan, that we should fail. Their purpose is not to have us fail. Their purpose is to have us succeed. But there's a thing called karma. And when we do fail, the karma has different levels of failure. There's failure on a worldwide scale, failure on a national scale, failure in a group selected scale, and then failure on an individual scale. We can fail on all those different ways. The ways that we fail determine the ways that we suffer. If we fail individually, we suffer from some individual consequences. We fail through a group, such as your church or some other organization you belong to. You suffer through the failures of that organization. If you fail through a country, you fail through the results coming through the governance and the laws and the non-use of those laws, the illegalities and many other things of that country, and the high level of taxation, the severe levels of restriction of freedoms and uses of your life and liberties. And if you fail on a worldwide scale, then the planet itself and its survival for humans goes south. Some of the things I'm talking about are at a minimum on a national, countrywide scale. And others are on a worldwide scale. And those are so serious, so big, that as compared to your individual one, the results on how and what and who you really are going to be, your children and their children, there's no comparison. Just there is no comparison. When you screw up the world or the country that you live in, you really have made some bad problems for yourself and everybody else around you. You can screw up your individual life, and within short time, months, a couple of years, you can change your life. You screw up a country, it could be lifetimes for all the people in it. And others that may live there in the future, before things are even halfway better. And the world, while that goes bad, start looking for new places, new stars, new planets, maybe even new galaxies to move on to. It's rare, New Galaxy is a really rare thing. But certainly you can move on to a new star system. Things are not good right now. And we're moving towards some difficult problem times. There could be a nuclear exchange with hundreds of nuclear weapons that could poison the planet. There could be a constitutional crisis in the United States that leads to an authoritarian dictatorship, led most likely by progressives and some Fabian socialists, adopting a form of modified colonial Marxism. And it could be the end of all religious freedom as we understand it. It could be an end of virtually every other kind of freedom. These are the kinds of things that would be failures of these tests that are going on right now. We need to be very, very vigilant. Vigilance means being open about who and what you are with others and not trying to hide it because you're afraid of recriminations. What kind of recriminations? Every kind. If you're afraid, you've probably got an open heart chakra, but you're still not very useful. You've got to get over your fear. And if you're not afraid, you should be, but then your heart chakra is probably closed. And you're being driven by your own selfish desires. The more you do, the more you move in that vein, the more you will pay for the karma that all are creating. Some serious karma could be coming. Economic hardship is almost certainly going to be part of the karma of all of these issues that I'm discussing. I was talking about many of the esoteric and more, we'll say, nebulous conceptual issues, but there are definitely material issues. It will become harder and harder to maintain even a minor standard of living. And we may be facing the kind of standards of living that we saw in Great Britain for 20 years after World War II, and isn't that much better today in some respects. That's the kind of thing we're headed for. We're going kind of backwards in time to that kind of era. But the real bad part about it is not so much the standard of living, but the ability to change it. That is going to get much worse than even at any time it became in England. If things turn out the way I think they could here in this country. One of the problems with evil is that it uses our fears of economy to get us to make very, very seriously wrong choices because it really wants to destroy the existing economies that are free or reasonably free and creative to enforce a governmental regimen through either dictatorship or through, we'll call it, communistic socialistic methods that ruins the possibility for most people to be creative at all in any economic sense. And economy is not just about making money. As a matter of fact, anybody who's in business pretty much, or most people who are in business pretty much know this. Well, they know it. That it's about the creation itself. Many people work much harder in businesses, but find the creative aspect of it the most important element. And then they help others to be creative who may work for them because they recognize that. Those are the best businesses. Those are the people who are doing the best kind of work. Now, if they're doing the opposite, trying to eliminate competition completely and make people subjects in their business to their rules, that's a terrible thing. And that's just another form of evil. So I'm not a laissez-faire, complete capitalistic, do-whatever-you-want, step on anybody's head you want. No, I'm not saying that. I'm saying that all forms of behavior require virtue. And being a capitalist doesn't mean you can do anything you want to anybody at any time because you just have to have some more money than they do. Absolutely not. All right. God's test with evil. Where are we going to move to? What are the answers that we can really do, besides all our failures that we may have to face, to dealing with this situation? First, we need to be active. Active means not sitting around reading a book about it or listening to the news, but certainly be informed and listen to the news. Don't listen to only one news station. Check out different ones. If you hear different things, compare them for truth. Use the internet for research as well. Look at history. Listen to the show again. See how much of it you agree with, what you don't agree with, and see where the fallacies then exist. You can communicate with me. I will take emails. You can call me. We can talk about this. If you disagree, that's fine. That's okay. And then, after you have done that part, actively let other people know about some of the concepts you believe in that I've talked about. Let them know that evil exists and what's going on and why you think there needs to be more done about it. Put your money where your mouth is. Find the highest and best use for your money and use it to try to overcome the worst evils that are out there. Be creative. Create things that you need and others need to defeat evil, and in the ways that are most creative, because evil doesn't know about those and can't easily get around you. If you go in the old ways and you deal with things from old perspectives, especially some religious organizations and their suggestions, those ways won't work. Evil has grown past that, especially on Earth. And you'll be defeated, and you'll fail. That's assuming you get into the crown chakra part of creation. You have to be creative. Ultimately, if you are not creative yourself, find others that are and join them. Join them not because you're a member of a certain organization or not, but join them because they are truly using the tenets that I have suggested in the show to be of some help and value. Judge people by how you would judge yourself and not by whether they're part of this group or that group. And if you're a member of some group that you think is evil, quit. If you're a member of a church that is espousing things that are evil, quit. If you're a member of any community organization that claims it's helping people, but you can see evil in what it's doing, quit. Start your own if you need to be opposing to it, and find others that are doing good things. Let your conscience and your heart and your mind, your head, be your guide. And don't allow others to make you afraid. Whenever you're afraid, look for what you need to sacrifice. Make the commitment to make that sacrifice, and the fear will go away. Recognize that every fear is about a loss. Once you choose to make the loss first before anybody else can get to it, but you're using it as something to build creatively, an instrument to defeat evil, you'll be fine. And the greatest loss most people think they can lose is their life. But may I remind you, a life lived in evil and darkness and subjugation and total destruction of all will and goodness is worth nothing. You're better off living in the astral world, dead from this one, than to continue to become one of the evil masses and in their clutch and control. Fight until you're dead, if that's what you're really afraid of happening. Don't be afraid of death. Only say, I will use my life in as creative and best a way I can. but not to the point where I cower and fear the terrible onslaughts that could be coming. Prepare for survival so that you can be an instrument. Use some of your resources so that you can survive some of the terrible things that are happening, but not all of them. Use a lot of your resources just to fight evil. Just enough to get by is okay. You don't have to live in a castle just because there was some kind of terrible incident that has made the world more difficult to live in. You just want to be able to get by. These are things that I suggest. Further, educate other people. Become a resource so that other people can find out what you already understand. And don't impose your thoughts on others, but be open. Let other people know that you have some things that they can tap into, that you can, and you could maybe just resourcing to other places, or maybe you can explain and teach things yourself. Whatever you're capable of doing, do it. Start with family and friends, but move to many others who you may not know that well. Assume that people want to be of help until they prove otherwise. Anyone who is evil, avoid and do not reveal your plans to. You don't have to be totally secretive in everything, but don't put your head in the noose so that somebody can pull on it. That's silly. Regard most people as being capable of winning the test of evil and succeeding rather than failing. Assume that most people have some ability to do so, but not your ability. Be judicious in how much time and energy you spend with people, because some don't require much, and most of what you can do can't be of assistance. So don't waste your resources on people who aren't going to do very much. You can be smart and wise in what you give. Don't give the same to all, because that is not wise and it plays into evil's hand. It wants you to deplete your resources on those who it has control over or will have mostly negative to zero effects on it. It revels in that sort of behavior. So don't play into that sort of thing. You can make the choices to change and make a difference. And pray. Don't pray for yourself. Don't pray for some specialized thing. Remember, the karma we're dealing with is mostly nationwide and worldwide. Pray for the nation and the world for the changes that you think need to be helped with by those of greater consciousness and greater ability. Pray to God. That applies to all those under God capable of helping. Also, it won't be improbably until after the middle of June when we will see more miraculous changes in dealing with the test of evil, because those 3 months I told you about in the spring are unfortunately, we're in hand right now, and this is, we can't expect just the most spectacular, amazing results at this moment. But after June, we could see better things take place on a worldwide basis. So some prayer now might prepare for the future, but just be aware there's some timing to this whole thing. I'm running out of time for right now. I hope this show has made a difference, because we need a difference as things are moving. And I hope that this has made you more aware that there really is a test by God by using evil. Until next week, this has been Niles McFlower for Why Life Is.